Hello, and welcome to today's show. We've just watched and will be discussing Guardians of the Galaxy 2, so clip yourselves in as we go to infinity and beyondu. Yes, as the Marvel Cinematic Universe passes us by, it's time to taserface the music. But before we wonder where did the good times ego, there's some Quiller questions left to ask. Star-Lord gets Hoff on the right foot with Planet Daddy, but after he gets told to take a Walkman, will he end up forever Stallone?
Ooh. Nice.
Mr. Blue, you did it right, but did his end come a little too soon? And finally, now the gang's tarnished their reputation with the Golden Princess, does her egg cassette the scene for Guardians 3?
Oh, nice.
And a pun so good I'll use it again. All this and Gamora on today's A Marvelous Lunch Break.
Yay.
Yay, well done, Dan.
Thank you.
How many songs were in that opening spiel?
I think I only managed to get the one in there.
Oh,
Mr. Blue, you did it right. Obviously, a nod to our close but former friend, Yondu. Anyway, on with the show. Anna, how are you today?
I'm great, Dan.
I would call you Miss Marvel herself, but I got a little bit ahead of myself. And empathetic as usual, it's Agent Mantis. Sorry, I mean Martin Carter.
I don't mind being called Mantis.
Mantis Carter.
They always get my name wrong on my Starbucks cup. Today I'm Matt. So I'm hoping one day it will be Mantis.
So if this is the first time you're tuning in, or if you're back for more, do note there are spoilers in this podcast. And if you're listening to us, please remember to review it and subscribe so you can get more of this in your ears on a weekly basis. Carrying on a usual trend, Anna, have you prepared anything for today's podcast?
Well, it's funny you should ask, Dan, but yes, I have.
Nice.
Is it Challenge Annika?
It is Challenge Annika.
Yes.
Are you going for the full or the short?
Well, I've got both. Depends on what you want.
Both.
You want both. Okay.
You want both. Can you seamlessly go one into the other and do it all in under 2 minutes 15?
Oh, no, I know.
She needs to breathe at some point.
Yeah, I'm going to have to suck in some air at some point, but... Maybe I'll work on that for the next one.
Okay, that's fine.
That's the right
one. Let's put a timer on the stopwatch, right? Let's put a stop on the thing. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
For today's Guardians of the Galaxy 2 15-second plot summary.
You bet.
3, 2, 1... Go!
After their latest gig, Rocket Sticky Fingers set the Guardians on the path for Peter's mysterious god planet dad, a.k.a. Ego. Turns out he needs Star-Lord's power to tap into some world-destroying superpower. Our heroes have to set aside their own drama to save the galaxy from Ego's universe-conquering master plan.
There isn't a lot of plot to this film, is there?
No, I mean...
Considering how difficult you found last week to get all of the different variables in.
So here's the interesting thing, as I segue into the next one. That was really easy to get really fast. This 2-minute summary was not. That was hard as hell. The plot is like really sparse, but what actually happens, so much stuff. So much stuff.
I can't wait to hear all about it.
Well, you did that in 14 seconds.
Wow.
Awesome.
Okay, so next week you've got to do it a second quicker.
Okay. I did that one 5 seconds. Could you actually understand me in that one?
Yeah.
I felt like I really was stumbling over my words.
Before we start to make even more comments on the paper-thin plot of this movie, there really wasn't much to cover.
No. Okay. But the minutia of this plot, which I want to talk about more in full after this 2-minute summary, but let's see how this goes. I'm less confident on this one, but...
Okay.
Buckle your seatbelts. 3, 2, 1, go!
Oh, what? Okay. Don't start that over again.
No, the time is on. Okay. Fine.
Okay.
Challenge Annika doesn't get a second go. When she's in that helicopter, that's it. Time
that
is
helicopter
on.
Crashes, that's her done.
That's it. Oh, man.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, go.
Missouri, 1980. Whoa, Quill's mom can't sing well, but young Kurt Russell loves her anyway, and he's laying on some sweet alien charm and planting some crazy space flowers. 34 years later, the Guardians are guarding some batteries from an intergalactic squid monster. Blasters, dancing, swords, and baby Groot is cute. Suck it, Martin and Dan. Guardians victorious and Nebula is the prize. Ugh. But Rocket's thievery has them on the run from the dickish sovereign who want their batteries back. Exciting space battle and sudden rescue by a mysterious man riding a spaceship who, oh damn, turns out to be Quill's dad, a.k.a. Kurt Russell, a.k.a. Ego. After suspicions from Quill, emotional cheerleading from Gamora, they and Drax are off to Ego's crazy acid trip planet. Rocket is left behind to fight off Yondu and his crew who are collecting a bounty from the sovereign after being crapped on by Sylvester Stallone. But wait, the Ravengers are sick of Yondu's Peter saving bullshit, and it's a full-on mutiny. Groot and Rocket are captured. Nebula shoots off Yondu's mohawk and takes off to kill Gamora. Now it's time for some serious exposition with Ego about his origins, his quest for love, and whether he has a penis. Turns out he's a celestial super god, and Peter's inherited his strange glowy powers. The men bond during glowy baseball, but now Gamora's the suspicious one. But Peter's not having it. No dancing for them. And Gamora storms off to be attacked by crazy Nebula. But Nebs is terrible at it, so sisterly angst instead, followed by skeleton cave discovery. But first, Rocket and Yondu bond in jail, and now it's time to bust out. High shenanigans with Groot, the Mohawk is back, and now death. So much death. Arrow murder and many dead Ravengers. But they're free to find their friends. More daddy bonding time. But oh no, it was all a crazy lie, and Ego needs to tap into Star-Lord's power to take over the galaxy. He's killed millions of his kids to find this power, and oh shit, he even killed Quill's mom, and Pete is pissed. But that won't save him, and Quill is skewered to power the crazy alien flower explosion. Oh no, Dairy Queen! Guardians to the rescue! And it's time for an epic battle at the center of the planet to destroy Ego while fending off the Sovereign. Underground spaceship battle, lasers, superhero landings, instructions, glowing tentacles. Things are looking grim, but the power of love fires Quill up. Massive explosion, and his daddy is dust. Yondu makes the ultimate sacrifice to save Quill, because turns out he was Pete's kind of daddy all along, even though he was mostly a jerk. But no matter.
Stop.
Fuck. Damn it. I was so close.
We can only dedicate 2 minutes of this podcast to that. But
well, you were very, very close to the end there.
How close? How many lines?
Okay, here are the last two lines. But no matter, forgiveness all round. Time for an epic funeral, tears, and sisterly hugs. And the Guardians live to guard the galaxy another day.
Oh, you were so close.
I feel like we
needed
those last sentences as well.
I feel like you're incredibly close.
Darn it! Yeah.
Well, well done, well again.
Done. Well done for stretching the plot out for a whole side of A4.
That was almost as exciting as this movie.
Great.
And before we really rip on it, as I feel I'm about to, let's look at who's protecting the galaxy from face planets and all the purple things we've got. So, cheers. Booze. Chris Pratt.
Yay. And also, is he meant to be 34 now? He does not look 34. He looks good.
In real life or in...
Well, because the events of this happened 34 years later, don't they?
Yeah. 34 and maybe minus 9 months.
Yeah. That's a good... He looks
34
good for
years after the events of him being abducted or...
Oh, no, of him, of the terrible
of
car
his
singing.
Conception.
And, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Zoe Saldana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dave Bautista.
Yeah.
Yes.
Vin Diesel.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hey, Vin Diesel voices Bobby Groot.
Yeah,
surely they've got enough I Am Groots on file now.
Do you know that he also, like, I don't even begin to understand how this works, but he recorded the Groot dialogue for 16 different other language dubs as well.
So, and he was given...
Ich bin Groot.
Yeah.
Je suis Groot. Well, I don't know any of our languages.
Okay, that's two.
Hola,
Spanish.
Groot. I don't know what I am.
Yes,
I
Groot.
He was, so I read this on the trivia of IMDb before we started recording this. And apparently he was given an actual script with actual responses from Groot so that he could...
inflect properly.
Yeah, decide how he was going to deliver that one line.
Wow.
Vin Diesel's got many layers, more layers than I thought he had.
But that being said, he must only say it like 10 or 15 times in the whole movie.
Mm, so each time it's important.
Yeah, but I imagine recording it for 16 languages is still, what, day's work?
Yeah. You've still paid millions of pounds.
Millions.
Oh, mega, mega bucks. And you know what? I'd do something as tedious as that for a day to be part of the Marvel
totally.
Universe.
And you get to be baby Groot. Oh, I could have saved some time if I hadn't told you guys to suck it.
finishing up, we've got Bradley Cooper.
Oh, he's great in this.
Michael Rooker.
Yeah.
Karen Gillan.
Oh.
Oh, God.
I'm hungry. Give me some of that Nava root.
You're doing the eyes as well. You really... We could seriously replace Karen Gillan with you.
Yes, you can.
I'm a mega villain, and the first line in this film is, I'm hungry. Give me some Nava roots.
I'm hungry.
How would you feel about like 2 to 3 hours worth of blue makeup every day?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she had plenty of time to practice her lines, didn't she? Sitting in that chair, you thought she'd be better.
Oof. I'm hungry.
It's not ripe.
it's like the only joke that doesn't land in this entire film.
It's not ripe.
It's not ripe.
Pom Clementif.
Who's that?
Mantis.
Oh, I love Mantis.
Sylvester Stallone.
So weird.
Who is higher build than Kurt Russell?
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
That's contractual, isn't it?
Yes, really.
Kurt Russell.
Mm-hmm.
Luke Skywalker.
What?
What?
It just reminds me of Luke Skywalker.
What?
Oh, you mean like recent Luke Skywalker?
Yeah,
okay.
A visual.
You know, when people say Luke Skywalker, I still get kid Mark Hamill. I don't get
little duck foot.
No, yeah. Absolutely not.
But he wears more scarves when he's older, I think. And Hugo had a big scarf on.
You know, if you say Mark Hamill, though, I get present day Mark Hamill.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm exactly the same. Present day Mark Hamill, babyface Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Absolutely. Elizabeth Debicki. It was the Golden Princess.
I thought she was quite good.
Yeah.
I'm very meh about the Sovereign.
Sean Gunn, who...
I love Sean Gunn.
Is the guy who inherits the arrow.
Yeah, Kerrigard. What the heck is his name? It's something weird.
Who knows?
I want to say Kerrigard. That's a thing. That's like a philosopher. That's not his name. I can't remember his name.
I think he really looks like... you know when Karen Gillan was in Doctor Who and it was Amy and Rory?
Mm.
I think he really looks like Rory.
Oh, that's a really good shout, yeah.
I mean, he's forever endeared to me. He's a reoccurring character in, like, Gilmore Girls named Kirk. Like, anyone that knows Gilmore Girls really knows Kirk.
I don't think we're your target audience for Gilmore
Girls. I don't know Gilmore Girls.
Okay, fair enough.
I think I got roped into watching some sort of Netflix special about 12 months ago, but...
Yeah. Oh, well. Anyway.
But apparently, and if I've read this right, I think that he also does the motion stuff for Rocket.
Oh. Really? Sean Gunn?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
I think so.
Because the director does all of Groot stuff, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he does all the dancing of Groot. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that as well. Yeah, I've seen that actually. Just popping some moves out. It looks pretty fun. Yeah, a bunch of other people in this movie as well, but
so
who cares
people.
About them, right? let's, you know, it's...
Whoa, David Hasselhoff.
Oh, yeah, great cameo. That's good.
Oh, Dan's not happy.
You know what, I think you made a point when we were watching Doctor Who, whatever
Strange.
It was, Doctor Strange, that one, about Benedict Cumberbatch maybe being too... high profile to step into a big Marvel role, and it kind of taking you out of it a little bit. I think this movie, there's so many actors that pop up like that, and I'm just like, oh, how can you not think that Sylvester Stallone is Sylvester Stallone at this point? Same with David Hasselhoff. I mean, I know when he pops up, he's playing David Hasselhoff.
Yeah.
But
the thing,
but also it's like Peter's fantasy of a father.
I just think that the references in this movie felt a lot more forced. Like when the big Pac-Man
that's,
oh, that, yeah,
that's the one
that's,
that really took
that was bad.
That was too far for me.
At least they set it up, but I still was not happy about it.
Okay, so let's talk about some positives of this movie. See if there's any in the opening. I've got it listed as the opening dance battle.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I mean, I really like the scene a lot. I love how the sort of like you had in the first one, those sort of big title cards, and similar to the first one, you sort of knew what you were getting in that kind of opening scene. And I think there's just something so hilarious that all the action is taking place in the background, and you've just got this little dancing tree that you're dealing with. I can understand why that might annoy some people, but I think that's just such an excellent, like, subversion of expectations for an opening action scene.
What about you, Martin?
I've softened to this film in general on the rewatch, but I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, I want to watch the Guardians of the Galaxy. Guard the Galaxy. Look, that's what it says on the tin. And I don't remember very much in the first film seeing them, like, with their ability to kind of fly with the jetpacks and fight like that. And I think that's really cool. And I'd love to have seen them take down a big space thing with a sword and a jetpack. Like, that's a cool thing that I want to see. That, to me, is cool. It doesn't need to go, like, meta cool and have it in the background with a dancing tree and a jukebox.
Yeah, I'm completely with you on that one. Like, if they'd have flipped to Groot for, like, one little bit of it, I'd have been like, ha, okay,
we
that's
still
great.
Saw the big, like, finale of the battle, like, how they actually took the squid monster down.
Yeah, but I think...
Did it go on too long for you?
As soon as this movie started, and I remember being in the cinema, and you know, if you've listened to our previous episode on Guardians of the Galaxy, and I know you both have listened to me talk about it at length, I adore the first movie. It was amazing, and it changed my whole perception of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. When this movie started, I just groaned when this sequence was going on. Poor choice of music, poor choice of just way to frame it all with Groot. I think the whole, like, rocket with speakers thing and that little joke is just so contrived. Do you know what I mean? It didn't land with me at all. So, yeah. That's, wow. That's my...
Oh, no. I thought I was going to be the... I'm usually the Debbie Downer.
I know.
And we might have to do some... Some picking up of Dan's spirits.
Yeah.
I think I needed some spirits while I was watching this. And then we kind of neglected. There's actually a pre-opening scene, which is the scene
the 80s.
In Yolden times.
Oh, it was some truly terrible singing. My God. Wow.
She wasn't picked for a singing ability, was she?
No, she wasn't.
And that kind of kicks off the plot of this movie, where it's all about ego and... his ego, I guess. Mm. Yeah. Just on the nose with that subtle naming reference.
I am nothing but a good father. My name is Ego, purely coincidentally.
Yeah.
Do not look behind the curtain. There's nothing to see behind the curtain.
It was quite on the nose with the name. And there seemed to be no subtle context to anything in this movie.
Oh, God. No. This was full sledgehammer effect with everything.
So, what do you think of Peter Quill's planet daddy issues?
Planet sized daddy.
If we can use
issues.
The word daddy throughout this, I'm going to really struggle.
How about planet daddy?
No.
Planet daddy.
Stop. Oh, my God. Can you take your mouth away from the microphone when you said
planet daddy?
Oh, my God.
Are we going straight into the planet? Are we going to
might
do
as
that?
Well? Let's tackle those.
Yeah.
Those daddy.
If you do it in the movie, you never leave there. So,
like, this film could have been like Guardians of the Galaxy, colon Luke Skywalker's Pandora. That's how I see this thing. It's like he looks like Luke Skywalker, and it looks like Pandora from Avatar. That's what it looks like to me. And it's just a weird planet. Like, I know it's meant to look a little bit like too perfect, but like those weird porcelain figures
diorama
in those
thing.
Yeah in yeah. those there that's creepy. That's some creepy CGI. I didn't like that. No. That's not for me. It was just weird, the whole like I know that the Guardians of the Galaxy universes are all weird, but they all have a kind of a semblance of reality in them. Like people's skin is yellow, but they still look real. Whereas on his planet, everything was like weirdly porcelain and glossy.
For you, did it feel like it was kind of more of a dream state than a planet?
Yeah, it was quite a dream state. And we spent a lot of time there as well. Like, there was so much chat. So much chat.
Yeah, I think one of the big things I've written down here is that there was like, no Xandar in this movie. And that was, like...
No, nowhere. Yeah.
That's what you needed. You just need some variants.
All the other worlds had so much depth to them, and this was just, like, fields,
I mean, I think...
Palace.
I can see what they were going for there. I think the real, like, dreamlike kind of acid trip state was really intentional. I mean, I guess I can only assume that he sort of has created this planet with the intention of just, like, drawing, like, people in. Like, it's meant to be, like, intriguing and interesting. Like, be, you know, come to my fantasy world, which is actually him. Like, he's the planet, which is another weird thing to unpack, really. But I don't know. I mean, in general, I don't love the storyline. I don't like the main plot that kind of was the moving factors of like what got everyone to their various places, but actually, for me rewatching it, I was really nervous about rewatching this one because I remember coming out of the cinema like really disappointed, and the way that like the Doctor Strange rewatch went for me, which was just like devastating. Rewatching this, I liked it more than I remembered. That's not to say I loved it, because I didn't, but I think. If you're gonna have Pete like attacking his daddy issues, at least they went about it in the most like over the top bombastic way possible, which I don't know, I can appreciate.
I don't know why I didn't just create another. I mean, I know his point was he needed more power from someone else, but if he was so lonely, he could make things out of nothing. Why didn't he just create a few more of him?
Yeah,
he couldn't make something which had the same level as of power as he did.
And I think also, I mean, I get the sense that he can't create, like, sentient things. Like, there's nothing on that planet that's, like, living. Like, Mantis, like, he found her. And also, like, if you think about it, oh my God, like, so much dialogue and exposition. But, so he's been around for a really, really long time. And I can guess we just can sort of assume that he has gone batshit nuts. Like, he is now just totally cray, looking, you know, to conquer worlds, all this weird stuff. So I don't know if it's like a motivation of loneliness. I think it is just now like, oh, I'm gonna spread out and be everywhere. And but I don't think he can create anything that he would feel as his equal or that he could interact with. I think that's one of the things that motivated him to just, well, I'm just gonna take it all over then, because there's nothing here like me.
And I did struggle with him and Peter's kind of relationship, but I thought there was some really good male relationship moments in this film. Like, I think him and Yondu's relationship was quite special. I thought I'm saying Yondu right, aren't I?
Yeah, yeah.
And Yondu and Rocket's kind of moment, I thought that was really endearing as well. I thought there was quite a lot of interesting relationship moments between men in this film. I thought that was, I quite liked that we always talk about Tony in particular standing out as the one who's got the most kind of time dedicated to his emotional journey, and we're not feeling like it quite got there. But I quite liked this one, that there was different relationships between men and they were complicated and they talked about it. I don't know, I felt that was different.
Yeah, it felt good. And you know, I if there's a big takeaway from this movie for me, it is Yondu, because he excels with his interactions with multiple different characters. He's funny, he's something new, which is what I think made the first Guardian so great, was that it was like, it was all new. And yeah, Yondu was a little bit of a protagonist, a little bit of an antagonist in the last movie, but he really kind of came to the front in this one.
He came from nowhere as well. I didn't think he'd be have such a major role in it.
Yeah, totally.
Complex character.
He's Mary Poppins. I'm Mary Poppins, y'all.
That was actually a joke that didn't land for me the first time and did the second time.
Really.
There's quite a lot of Guardians of the Galaxy making other Guardians laugh in this film, isn't there? There's a lot, like the Taser. I didn't find Taser face funny at all. Like, I didn't. For me, that's like, that wasn't a funny name.
They just played on it too long.
Yeah,
it was great when he was like, "Ha, your name's Taser face." Yeah. Everyone laughs at him. Just leave it there.
And then Nebula with it's not right. But the only time I genuinely laughed along with one was Drax and Mantis. I thought their friendship was perfection. These kind of these two people that if they're in the real world would be on the kind of autistic spectrum, figuring each other's emotions out, being overtly literal, being an alien, not in the sense that they are aliens, but alien in alien environments and working out the terrain. That I loved every minute they were on screen.
Do you think, just with Drax though, I mean, do you think that he was not given the sort of space and time he had to develop in this movie like he did in the first one? I mean, there's huge emotional bits for Drax in the first movie, and he was a big driver for a lot of the plot.
Yeah, because he called them up, didn't he?
Oh yeah.
Tell Ronan I'm here.
Alright, Ronan. Come here. You want to go outside and fight, lad? That's what he essentially did.
He invited him to the car park, intergalactic phone book. Intergalactic yellow pages.
But he was actively part of the plot in the last movie, where this one he felt like
he was entirely unnecessary. Doing like the 2-minute review, there were a lot of characters that just like are singularly unnecessary. Mantis as well, like, doesn't really have a role. But I think with Drax, like, it kind of like, okay, so if he's there just for the comedic beat, what have you, but I think for Drax, I would say he made such a journey in the first movie. Like, he's found his new family, the kind of people that he wants to protect, and even though he's like quite blunt and rude, he very clearly cares about these people. So clear at the end when he's like, where's Quill, Rocket, where's Quill?
So I think he did go on quite a big journey in this film.
Really?
Like, I think he really opened himself up to caring about other people. And
I feel like he was already there, though. I mean, I'm not like disparaging him as a character, and it's fine that I don't think he like had like, you know, huge plot movements. But I think like there was just nothing really that was essential for him there. I think he was more as a way to kind of bring Mantis kind of into the group for them to have that connection, rather than anything that was needed on his behalf, really.
I don't know. I thought that him and Mantis was him taking tentative steps towards opening himself up to a romantic relationship again.
Interesting.
I think because there's two moments at the end. The first one is where He's been sucked into the ground and he's really holding her up above her to protect her. Yeah. And the second one was at right at the end. It was just like, you're beautiful on the inside. Like, and I thought this their relationship was him. Because obviously the rest of his, you know, the rest of the Guardians are his family and they're like his bros. But I thought this is the first time that he opened himself up again after his bereavement to a loving romantic relationship again. And maybe I just completely overread that.
Yeah, but there was so many other so many other developing emotional relationships in this movie I had no interest or time in that. I needed a character not to be having an emotional and deep relationship.
Yeah, everyone was.
Yeah. I guess if we're talking about like Jack's development, there was one beat right at the end when the funeral's happening, the music's playing, and Jax just starts swaying very slightly to the music, like to the beat, you know, after having that chat about certain people don't dance and you just don't change. And then for him to be like kind of, I think he was giving Groot like a bit of a cuddle and was just like having a bit of a sway. I was like, oh, that's quite nice.
Yeah. I think, Dan, you look livid. I think what's really interesting about this film is that the Guardians of the Galaxy films, or you think of the Guardians of the Galaxy and think, oh, they're the cool ones. They're the cool ones out of the MCU. And people take the piss out of people like Hawkeye and Captain America for being the kind of...
How do you look at me when you said people take the piss of Hawkeye?
But, you know, for being the kind of schmaltzy family... This must be the schmaltziest, apart from the first Avenger, this must be the schmaltziest film in the MCU. Everyone's crying, everyone's hugging, everyone's healing family wounds. You've got Nebula and Gamora who are like hugging.
But it's all family wounds that I don't care about.
But this is like, why is Guardians of the Galaxy remembered as hipster, you know, different, when actually everyone's crying, everyone's cuddling, everyone's like figuring out their daddy issues.
Yeah.
Like, there's so, like, compared to the action scenes, like the emotion takes up like 60% of stuff.
It's really true, actually. It's really
like in the final battle, like Gamora isn't even involved with it. She just goes up a lift, like big rock lift. She sits on a lift for like, that's her bit of the action scene. There's no action in the final battle.
No.
Apart from the giant Pac-Man.
And the Gamora Nebula lift knocked me off something special.
Like,
right?
Gamora was like this fierce warrior.
Actually, I had very little to do in this film. Very little.
So let's go on then. Gamora and Nebula. Ugh. What do you think about their...
I'm hungry.
Sister bust-up. I mean, Martin, you were very critical of Nebula in the last movie.
He loves her now.
Has there been any room to improve?
I mean, she's just terrible. She's just really terrible. She's just always the same level. Like, no matter what is happening to her, she's always the same level of angry, even if she's, like, getting her own way. Mm-hmm. Like, when they're in the end and, like, she'd put that shit in her arm to like, electrocute all the Sovereign's fleet.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, it's going to hurt. And she's like, promises, promises. I'm like, ugh, sexy Nebula.
You do such a good Nebula, honestly. We could recast this tomorrow.
We should. I'd do better than it. It's just like, everything is the same. I'm like, she's always goes from 0 to 100 in whatever circumstance she's in. Like, she can't deliver a line with anything other than complete angst and horror. Like, she screams like loads in this film. She always seems in really extreme pain, even when she's delivering lines about, you know, having bits taken off her. Like, there's no sadness there. It's all just this kind of really indifferent hatred. And I just even like Gamora and Zoe are great, and I think she's really great actor, but against Nebula and Karen Gillan, it still doesn't work for me. I don't know.
Do you think with...
Convince me otherwise.
Do you think with Nebula, there's a level of the performance that we're not getting that is, because she's had bits removed from her, those emotions are not necessarily there anymore, so she's delivering it in quite a android-like, robotic way?
I mean,
way.
If you look at Ultron, Ultron had so much personality, and he was all metal.
Yeah. I mean, and the thing I'd like to give Kieran Gillen the benefit of the doubt that is what is driving her performance, that maybe she is just in incredible pain all the time. She's just, you know, has been driven completely psychotic and around the bend by this horrible exercise that Thanos used to put her and Gamora through. Very possibly that is exactly how Karen Gillan is playing it. And, you know, props to that, backstory, all that. But, like, it doesn't help if it doesn't land. Like, it just... It was... And this was a slight problem I had with throughout the movie, that I feel like we are just meant to forgive things. And I know this is a bit of a problem in kind of superhero movies in general, and actually movies in general, because you have just a set amount of time where things have, like, shit has to get resolved. But the sort of description, like, Gamora and Nebula's battle, and she's talking about, like, I just wanted a sister. And I'm like, I don't believe you. Like, nothing you have ever done up until this point has indicated that. And, okay, fair enough, we've only gotten you for these, like, tiny chunks of time, but I just don't, like, this doesn't feel genuine. It doesn't feel earned. And now we're just supposed to be okay with Nebula, who's supposedly this, like, sadistic, murderous freak.
She just rocks up on the ship, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, you're right.
You're fine now.
Yeah, you're not handcuffed anymore.
Yeah, forget the bounty.
Yeah.
And I also had some issues with, like, Peter's complete turnaround on Yondu. I had some issues with that as well. Like, I know death is a real, like, intense way to get in touch with your emotions, but just the real emotional eulogy he gave at the end. I know a lot of people who had hit really hard and really loved it, but by all accounts, up to this point, even, you know, where it sounds like Yondu was trying to protect Peter, and kind of looking back, you can see the way where he let things slide. But Peter's memories of Yondu are terrible. Like, any time he talks about Yondu, there is no, like, affection, or even just sort of like, yeah, that guy. Especially in the first movie, like, anything he says or talks about Yondu seems to really come from a place of fear. And, like, you know, even the joke of, like, he said he was going to eat me. Ha, that's hilarious. Peter very clearly believed that. And I don't know. Okay, so maybe he didn't hand him over to the God Planet, didn't bring him back home because the God Planet would find him. But I don't know. I had some real issues while suddenly it was like, oh, you were my daddy. It's like, yeah, fatherhood is a lot of things. I'm not entirely sure he ticked all the boxes
there. I'm your daddy.
Yeah.
There was a lot. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of issues worked through with lots of different characters in this. Yeah. And maybe we didn't get the space to.
Sure. Yeah.
Because with the Gamora and Nebula thing, like, I've never fired a spaceship rocket at my siblings. But me and my siblings growing up, you know, we had really extreme fights. You know, when you're going through adolescence and you're trying to find your sense of self, and you do have really, really extreme, you know, fallouts and that sort of thing with your own family. But like, when she delivered the line of, I just wanted a sister, and then the scene just kind of cut.
Yeah.
Like, it, like, nothing was given that space to, because there was so much happening.
Yeah.
But also nothing happening.
It's very weird. You know what, I would love to have seen this movie without Planet Daddy at all.
We need to stop saying Planet.
Get rid of Planet Daddy and have all of that.
Planet Daddy sounds like an adult gay dating app.
Oh.
Have you registered for Planet Daddy?
Oh,
I'm
God.
Too old, I think, now. I think you have to be either end of the age
daddy.
Spectrum. Yeah. this week's podcast comes to you from Planet Daddy.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. There's a daddy out there for you.
Oh, my God.
I'd have loved to have seen the time and effort put into developing Peter Quill and Yondu's relationship that was given to him and some guy that we'd never met and have no care about. And the worst thing about it for me is that at the end, when Blue Daddy pops up and saves him and Quill's emotional about it, I think it's an emotional moment out of context of the movie, but in context of the movie, he's not seen him since he flew off at the end of Guardians 1 and he just nicked the shiny ball from him.
Yeah.
And suddenly he's tearful about him in space. There's no journey there between difficult anger and hatred, and suddenly he's emotional, and it's almost like they've expected that Peter's gone on the journey with Yondu that we as viewers have throughout this movie.
Totally. Yeah, totally.
But
really
he hasn't. He's been trapped on some weird planet, Daddy.
That's a really good point. So I really do like Yondu and Rocket's interactions and relationships, how they find that kind of commonality between the way they kind of push people. And that's such a good point. You're absolutely right. It's like Peter's meant to have known all that. And also, like, the way the Ravagers sort of forgive Yondu as well. Like, they all show up to his...
Yeah, it's not like they found out that he was actually doing a good thing this whole time, and he'd kind of taken a hit.
Rocket said that he'd sent word out to say what Yondu would.
But Yondu
but
would still
delivered millions.
He was
of
still
kids.
Doing the thing that they hated him for, which was trafficking kids, and that's the bone pile that you saw in the cave.
I love the moral high ground that Sylvester Stallone took.
Oh, I know.
At a brothel. I'm just it's like it's just, I'm gonna teach you some morals. But
let me do it my pants.
Do your trousers up first and say goodbye to that lovely yellow lady.
Oh, I'm sure she was lovely.
I'm sure she was.
There's no laws on sex work in space, so.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I'm making it up as I think I'm making it up as I go along, but I think whoever bloody made this movie made it up as they went along as well, and they'll be bloody lucky if they get asked back for the third one.
Well, is this the same?
Did, what?
He is doing the third one.
After the first movie, I followed James Gunn on Instagram.
So is it the same director who did Batman?
After the second movie, I unfollowed him on Instagram.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that like when people listen to our first podcast and then come back for a second one, like, oh, no.
No. Yeah, exactly. They're talking about the Hulk? Oh, get out of here. But I think it's just... From what I went away from the second movie feeling like was that his jokes and the way that he'd made this movie work, or the first Guardians movie work, was like cool and it was unexpected. But then there was expectation on this movie, definitely, and it didn't have that sort of sneak attack element that the first movie had. No one saw Guardians 1 coming, but this one, I feel it was like someone else had written this movie and tried to be as cool and as funny.
It was like that sort of thing you'd see on Tumblr.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like a fan fiction that had been made reality.
That's such a good description. Yeah, it felt like they just took everything and like tried to just dial it up to 11. I also really remember what you said before, Martin, about how a lot of undercutting of emotional beats would happen with the jokes, and I was really aware of that this time as well.
But isn't the usual analogy that in a trilogy the second one's always the best, right? So like Star Wars, they always say the second one's.
But in the MCU, with the exception of Captain America,
in one of the three Star Wars trilogies, that is true.
Yeah, but Lord of the Rings, people usually say second.
Yeah, I really liked it.
I thought Return of the King was the apex. I mean, I do agree. Yeah. I do know where you're coming from.
I would say the second Iron Man's.
Better than the first.
Yeah.
Whiplash.
I really liked it. You sat and heard me talk about how much I liked Whiplash.
I know, but I didn't think you liked it more than I... Did we?
I don't know.
It was so long ago. I can't remember
it's like
now.
Like 10 weeks ago now.
But I would say, in general, with the exception of Captain America, there is for every MCU trilogy, there's been a slight dip in quality, my personal opinion.
Really? Mm-hmm. But the Winter Soldier...
No, I said with the exception of Captain America.
Oh, with the
America.
Exception,
yeah.
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, that
okay,
one.
So you're expecting, I guess my point is, are you expecting Guardians of the Galaxy 3 to crescendo or to just die a horrible death?
Oof. I think a lot of it rests on what happens in Infinity Wars.
Yeah.
Because you presume that most of the Guardians will get out of Infinity War unscathed.
Alive. Yeah.
I mean, it's open season, isn't it?
50% of them will. I mean...
What? Really?
Do you think one's going to die in Infinity War?
We can't talk like this, because by this point, when this comes out, we'll have already seen it.
Yeah, so if anyone listened to Doctor Strange last week, we said that by the time we next sit around this table, we'll have seen Avengers Infinity War. And now we're sat around this table and none of us have yet seen Avengers
just
Infinity
pretend.
War.
Oh my God, I can't believe when that thing happened.
Yeah, and God. They all died.
In Wakanda.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you remember when they announced Secret Avengers and I was right about everything. Yeah, God. That was good.
Anyway, but I don't know. I don't know what to expect out of the third Guardians. I have to say that after this one, after the rewatch, like, I'm looking forward to the third one. I didn't think I would. Like, after seeing it in the cinema, I was like, oh, that was
I'm looking
good,
forward to the third one.
Yeah.
But only because of the first one.
Okay. I think they'll do more of an adventure on the third one, because they've done all the heavy lifting of bringing them together as a unit. They've worked through all their issues. I think it'll just be them on hijinks.
Yeah.
But if they wanted to dial this movie up to 11, they could have done that, and I think it would have been amazing. Like, more planets, more crazy aliens, more batshit characters, more fights, like, just constantly more of everything that they did before. But what they did is emphasized a few key things of the first movie, did more of that, and just and the story took a back seat. So they did more dropping of songs, and not
there
just like little bits. Like the difference between the intro of the first movie and this one was you got that little bit of it. It was fun, and he was kicking the rat, but then bang, it stopped, and there's actual action. This one, let's give you a whole song. Do you know what I mean?
And also, like, when they went in for the final battle, Daddy versus Young'un.
Daddy on Daddy.
And they had Fleetwood Mac on. Yeah. But they only had, like, two lines of it, and then it went into a score.
Yeah.
And I was like, I thought we were going to get a full song.
I love that song. I found the music quite intrusive in this movie. In particular, like, the first time they're, like, on Ego's planet, and they're kind of going around, and there was that song playing. I was like, oh, this doesn't feel right.
Whole story about the sea and being a sailor and always being wedded to the sea no matter how much you love someone.
Yeah.
It's like, this is... How long is that mixtape? Like, tapes can't physically hold this many songs.
Well, now he's got the Zune.
300.
So does this mean that now he's going to have music that,
well,
like, is up
Earth
from...
before Guardians 3.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Update it. So, yeah, so he's going
to... I'd love him to be listening to, like, Cardi B.
Oh, yeah. You guys have a lot of songs about butts now.
That Anaconda's playing in the background. That'd be great.
I saw something online, and I think this was just a comment on an internet message board, but someone said the third movie should be called Guardians of the Galaxy MP3.
I thought that was really good.
Nice. I can't take that. I can't take credit for that one.
God, I wonder if that means the new Guardians will have like modern music in it as well. Anyway, yeah.
So moving on a little bit, Martin, I think you've got some feedback from our lovely audience.
I do. I've got a fan mail. Well, ooh. after I've read the contents, you can tell me whether it's fan mail or hate mail.
Do we need a section for our fan mail?
I mean, this is the only one we've got, and we're on episode like 14.
Do you have a better name for it than fan mail?
No. Okay, so this is from Jay. Jay's a wrestler.
Hi, Jay.
And Jay's got some thoughts about what you said about Batista, who plays Drax in our Guardians of Galaxy 1 podcast. And you were quite disparaging about him, if I remember rightly. Yeah.
I thought I was really lovely about him.
So this message begins. There's no hello, by the way, with this message. We're straight into the feedback.
Wow, all right.
Batista was and still is a well-respected member of the WWE locker room.
I was disparaging about his wrestling.
Yeah.
Reputation. Right.
Not about his acting skills, because I think he smashes it.
Okay.
But in both movies.
Yeah.
Okay.
Described by Edge and Christian, who I presume are wrestlers, as humble and hardworking. Your friend was very wrong about him in podcast episode 10. The only bad rep he ever got was from the fans during his return for WrestleMania 30 backstage. He's a good guy. Also, if you check out the Edge and Christian's podcast... of awesome, they do an episode with Batista and he talks about Guardians of the Galaxy. Keep up the good work though. So there you go, you were wrong.
Well, thanks, Jay. That's I think that's some good constructive criticism, you know, sticking up for Batista's rep.
Yeah, his rep. And he's probably not of all the people in the MCU, he's probably not the one you want to annoy.
That is also an exceptional point.
Dan, how do you feel about this? You've gone very quiet.
Well, all I'm saying is that
he's going to defend himself.
Look, it's all rumour, it's speculation. The wrestle world is, you know,
all I'm
going to
say
full
is
of rumours.
Yeah. If you just type in the Google, Dave Batista WWE drama.
Oh,
you're going to get.
Is there a subreddit?
You're going to get a whole list of things that he's been accused of doing.
Wow.
But that being said,
he's humble and hardworking according to the Edge and Christian,
which is like all I'm saying is that the internet says things. People on the internet box say stuff.
If we can't believe the internet, who can we believe?
And I think, look, WWE is...
Oh, no, I don't want to talk about it.
Awesome, right?
Anna's gone.
No,
she checked
really
out.
Quickly. Okay, okay. I love it, but it's essentially a soap opera.
Yes.
With sports peppered in. And part of that soap opera is that there's loads of fan drama online. So if there's anything that you're going to be like, I want a gossip element of my life that also has a bit of sport in it, then watch WWE and you're going to get people slinging mud online.
Yeah.
So I think Dave Batista was a great wrestler. He had one move. he held the World Heavyweight Championship for far too long in the 2000s. He's boring, large, slow. But he's a great actor.
He's good in this. I enjoy him a lot.
When he was cast for this role, I was like, bloody hell, that's a risk, is that? But slamming it.
Yeah.
And honestly, if he walked in here right now, painted green, and was like, what did you say about me? I'd be like, I'd take it all back. Okay. I'm really sorry. Because it's just stupid drama online. And that, I think that's part of being a fan of the WWE is throwing drama around, slinging mud, all that sort of stuff.
Well, thank you very much for your feedback, Jay.
Thank you, Jay.
If anybody else wants to send us feedback without a hello or opening sentence, you can do so and we'll do our contact details after the show. Dan, maybe don't put yours on because you might get doxxed.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Do you think Dave Bautista's his desk is there?
Do you think he has a desk?
Plotting your demise. He doesn't need
How
a desk.
To dox someone.
How to drax someone.
How to drop drax. Yeah.
Oh.
Well, he certainly got traxed. He did it well.
Yeah.
But moving on a little bit then, please, for next week, if you do have any more questions or comments, send them in.
Yes,
please do.
Absolutely love that and need a name for our fan mail section with like three or four episodes to go. We can get that in there. We're about to peak, right? We're about to hit peak a Marvelous Lunch Break because Avengers Infinity War is coming out. So we'll be current. we'll not be stuck in the past. Moving on and just thinking a little bit more about some of the threats that the Guardians face in this movie. We've got the Gold Lady,
High Priestess,
which I'm not really sure what she has to do in this movie other than have a load of disposable ships that she's just cannon fodder.
Yeah. I thought those were kind of fun. I like the sort of arcade style, the bluff of like, oh, all these ships. It's like, oh no, they're just hanging out back in the air. They're big arcade.
I thought it was fun, but there was as a result, it added no threat
to
anyone. Mm. The stakes were so low for the majority of this movie that it just, even though it was nice action to watch, it was. Pointless. It was meaningless.
I liked that everyone in the Sovereign appeared to be from the same Amdram class. They all like had those really affected British accents and like were just not very good at acting in general.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the point though. Like they're these sort of engineered people. I think they are just meant to be like their main personality trait is that they're dicks. Yeah. That literally seems to be all they've got.
we'll cover it in post credits, but I liked it when we saw her at the end and she was quite dishevelled.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Why didn't she get the time to develop like that in the movie?
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been cool to see her get, like, gradually more unhinged and, like, send, like, you know, just with this whole slight against their pride, just, like, send crazier and crazier stuff after them. Yeah, that would have been way
more
interesting.
There was never, like, you know, which is maybe why the payoff about the dad being the bad guy never really landed, because there wasn't, like, something in the distance, like, some big bad in the distance that you knew was coming.
Yeah.
Whereas in a lot of other MCU films, you can kind of see the direction of travel and you know that... Yeah. Like Thanos is coming off.
This is spot on as well, because with the ego thing, it's like we're kind of in the dark, but not in the dark about it. Everyone can see instantly, oh, ego's bad.
Yeah, ego is the bad guy. Ego. Yeah.
But we're not given like a little inside hint about it in the movie, and you're like, when are the characters going to find out? Yeah.
Yeah. But we're not given something to distract our attention, so then there is a big reveal.
Yeah,
there isn't anything else.
You just know, and it's a slow burn, and it's like, okay, come on, let's find this out.
Yeah,
even the bits, you're not like, Mantis, say something, you know, you're not like, tell them, because you don't know what she's going to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just very slow build to a
quite
small crescendo.
Yeah, and I think it's actually kind of a shame that, like, Peter's parentage is now revealed. Like, that question's answered, it's not very exciting. Like, his weird... power, like, you know, the how he was able to hold the Infinity Stone, done, answered, before we get to the movie that has the big Infinity Stone thing.
But now we know he can't do that.
But now we know he can't.
I thought that's a massive shame that he lost his powers when the planet died. I thought that could have been a really cool thing.
Yeah, like a little flicker.
Like in Infinity War, if that was a moment where he, like, mastered his powers,
yeah,
because he was only like, you know, could do a flame and a ball and he could play catch with his dad. But
like,
if Infinity
which
War,
is totally, which to... is which is I'm not sure about. I mean, Anna, you're American, so a lot of American movies have like this whole catch metaphor as like a quintessential youth thing.
Totally, it's the ultimate father-son bond moment throwing a ball around.
How,
like that's,
how did that translate for you, Martin? Do you how do you feel when you see that sort of catch moment?
I'm allergic to sport, so it's quite difficult.
I mean, I'm not allergic to sport, and I just have no frame of reference for the emotion of that. I'm like, it's throwing a ball. Get over it.
It's weird. I do have some like American guy friends that flipping loved this movie, but really liked, like, it's felt the emotion of that scene. I'm just like, ugh.
It's just so schmaltzy. Like, how has Guardians got this mega cool rep when, like, they're playing catch with a ball of light and it's like, I'm sorry.
No, it's you know, I think you're doing a really good job of eloquating some of my distaste for this film. Not all of it.
So are we doing Big Bads then? So we've done Sovereign.
Yeah.
Gold. So there's the Gold Lady.
Yeah.
I haven't even bothered to learn people's names.
Amdram. Just call her Amdram.
Amdram.
Gold Lady Amdram. There's no Nova Corps in this goddamn movie.
Apparently
I know they all like died, but yeah. Come on.
Apparently Glenn Close filmed some stuff for this movie, but it got cut.
There was a little bit, wasn't there, with the blue gooey stuff. Like you saw, you know, when there was
like
different
two
shots of,
seconds.
Yeah, and you saw one of the little ships.
Yeah.
Also, I'd have loved to see one or two Avengers show up to the Dairy Queen when that thing.
Yeah.
Like if you'd have just got like a Quinjet with a Hawkeye or a Falcon or
like,
I'd have loved
give
a little.
Give us a seat here.
A little tiny.
Yeah. No, I mean, if you can get Falcon to appear in goddamn Ant-Man,
yeah,
maybe.
just one of them.
Get a few of them on the
or
ground.
Maria, you know, Maria Hill just been like, I'm assessing the situation.
Yeah, and how's that never mentioned in, like, any movie?
Well, what is the timeline on this?
So this came, this is before...
It's 34 years later.
So this is before Winter Soldier.
Okay, so that goo would have erupted. The Avengers would have already been assembled by then.
Yeah, this is post-Avengers...
Assemblage. Okay. Yeah,
so,
interesting.
There's just no mention of it whatsoever. And there's plenty of heroes knocking around.
It's in America as well. It's not too far to go.
No, you've...
Missouri.
Fly there in a
how
zip.
How long would that take Iron Man to get there?
Well, I don't know. He doesn't really obey the laws of physics, does he? like any movie does. You can get anywhere in like no time flat. Well, if they're from... So
in upstate New York.
Yeah, upstate New York, Missouri. I mean, it is a long-ass flight, but I imagine they can do it pretty quickly.
Yeah, okay.
But, anyway. but in that time, he's developing his Iron Guardians.
Yeah.
That are
That's
at the start
true.
Of Avengers 2, and they're like, wha-pow, we're on the scene. So why were they there? Mm. And that could have given us a little hint to what might have been happening in Age of Ultron prior to that. The timeline's all messed up, and it's really like I've been kind of ignoring it for ages. And then this longer we go through this journey, the Marvel Universe, it's starting to grate on me a little bit more. We've got the terrible timeline issues that Spider-Man has.
Yeah.
Coming up next week.
Are we doing that? Are we doing Spider-Man next?
Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah. Super excited for Spider-Man.
But I've got a pun ready for that at the end. So
okay. Okay. We won't ruin it.
Let's not in the bud.
Let's not shoot our web too early.
Oh, damn.
So there's a big blue blob that ate the town. There's Ego.
Yep.
Yondu's not really a bad guy in this movie anymore. There's Taser Face.
He's got a lot of deaths to his name, though, doesn't he?
Yeah. So many people dead.
I don't think he would have got a Ravager funeral.
No.
If word got out about how many people were killed.
If there was a viral picture of that bloody cavern.
Yeah.
With all them skulls in it. Oof.
Ugh, yeah, agreed.
They need Twitter in space. Is there anyone else? Is there anyone else annoying or bad?
Nebula's quite an antagonist, isn't she?
Yeah, but she's sort of neutralized pretty quickly.
The bit we haven't talked about yet, which I think is probably one of my favorite bits, is Nebula just reminded me because she kind of stops that scene, is when all the Ravengers try to come to get Rocket, and he has all those little gadgets.
Best moment.
Oh,
yeah.
It was just really clever, and it's just him running through the trees. He's got little bits of...
Yeah, his
stuff.
Inventions and stuff. I love that. And that like, the music really worked in that scene as well.
I really
loved that.
My only slight problem with that a little bit was it was a bit too dark. Sometimes the scenes I find, if it was Twilight rather than kind of...
No, that was a great scene. I really liked that.
Yeah, I really, really liked that. And then Nebula came in and ruined it. It's not ripe. You're not ripe. You need a few more years in acting school. to brown a little bit.
What is even happening in this movie? And honestly, I don't even where. So you go to Infinity War, and you watch an Infinity War, and you say, "I can see what the past 10 years has led to." What do you think we're going to look at back at this movie and say? That's why Guardians 2 was so important.
No. I think the thing that there's two things that I think are going to that is why I'm going to spaff my web too soon, which is why I think Volume 2 should stay. Rewatching it, and if I hadn't rewatched it, I would have probably never watched it again. Two reasons: one, I'm excited to see Peter Quill's return to Earth, because in this film there was a big deal made about why would I want to ever go back there, and I think there's going to be something to do with Peter Quill's return to Earth that I think will be a big deal in Infinity War. The second one is, now we've had a bit more time with Nebula and Gamora, and it feels like they're on the path to a sisterly bond almost. I am really excited to see their relationship with Thanos, and I really hope there's a scene with all three of them.
Yeah.
And I if I was a betting man, I'd say Nebula probably dies by him. But those two things, I think, is why this is worth seeing before Infinity War.
Yeah, I agree with it. Well, should we just go ahead and do the stay or go?
Well, I think...
Do you have anything else you want to discuss?
No. Oh, I mean, there's not really much I want to discuss, but I think we should just have another minute before we do a stay or go Sorry, listeners. I'm going to swear. If you're listening,
you're
going to
have to beat me out earlier.
With kids around. Yeah. I'm not going to beep you out. I don't have a beeper. Right?
Beep.
Fucking tiny fucking tree.
No!
Can literally piss off. I am furious.
Oh, come on.
That they kept him tiny. I was speaking to my friend going into this movie. I was like, I bet he's tiny for like the opening scene. He was like, I bet he's tiny for the whole movie. I was like, no, surely they won't do that, because that will be contrived and boring.
How could he possibly?
And what have they proceeded to do? Keep him tiny for the whole stupid
movie.
But
the events of this film are like 2 weeks.
Yeah, like at best, at most I think they're just like a few days apart.
It goes real quick in comics. It's space, it's a tree. It does
tree is notoriously quick growing things.
But he's not an actual tree. He's not like a tree that can speak. He's a different race, a different species that happens to look like a tree and says one line. They could sprinkle some Miracle-Grow on there or something and be like, it's Groot-Grow, and make him an actual interesting character that has more than one goddamn layer.
But he's a child.
But he's okay, he's a child. Fine. But this movie is lacking lovable characters in the same way that the first one was.
Did you meet Mantis?
What?
We haven't really talked
about
Mantis.
Are you saying that Mantis... Okay.
I played a practical joke. And then she laughed. She liked the practical joke. Oh, it was beautiful.
But it was nice. I get that.
She didn't fill the void that Groot left.
Yeah, that's the point. Groot left a huge void in this movie.
Yes.
Nova Corps left a huge void in this movie. Any reasonable threat or bad guy, and no exploration of space left voids in this movie. But Groot is the biggest one, because you don't even have that lovely Groot and Rocket relationship you had in the first one. Okay, you've got Groot and Yondu, Rocket and Yondu, whatever. But you come back to the same franchise of a movie for more of the stuff that you love. And if part of that isn't there, then you feel disappointed. And the laughs didn't replace the love that's lost.
Well, okay, I can't disagree with that. I think I think they really used the sort of like throw everything against the wall approach these jokes. I think a lot of them didn't land. But Baby Groot, I really like Baby Groot. I think like the Groot we knew and loved, he died in the first movie. This isn't Groot, and I think to have had him grow up and try to fill
Not explained in the movies unless you read the director's Twitter account.
Okay. But I think even so, okay, so say you don't know that and you think this is the same Groot, he's just regressed to being back to being a baby. I think that an absence of Groot is still important, because otherwise you've negated his sacrifice in the first film, because like Rocket had to know that he wasn't getting his friend back for a really long time. I mean, obviously Rocket knows he's not getting his friend back, but if you don't know the behind the scenes stuff, okay. You can't have Groot back immediately because it negates his sacrifice. If you had Groot growing up throughout the film, I think that would have been wildly distracting because you would have almost had a new character every time you saw him. Additionally, there's so many characters in this film that you're trying to, like, deal with the emotional connections with. I think having Rocket having to deal with a new Groot, because I think the thing is, when he becomes a bigger Groot, they're going to have to explain that he is not the same Groot that he was before. So I think Rocket having...
With the trash personality that they've given this
child
Groot...
He doesn't have a trash personality. He's a child.
He's a brat.
He is a brat, but he's a child.
But he doesn't really have a family structure around him, does
No.
he?
No. Oh, and if he doesn't, they're terrible instances.
But now if they do grow it up to be large Groot and they try and morph it into a similar sort of endearing character, you're just going to be like, you were a prick.
But I think...
I know a lot of like great people who were like pricks as children.
But I don't have to watch them in movies, right?
Right, so we know Dan's not child-friendly. We've established that. I think I sit somewhere between the two. It's like, I really appreciate why he wasn't in it as an adult. And I actually think Groot in the first one was a very old Groot as well. You got an old, wise, grandfatherly Groot, not an adolescent or just an adult. So an adolescent or an adult kick-butty sort of Groot I'm looking forward to. But I did think they perhaps overplayed it a little bit on the... You know, like, I didn't necessarily appreciate this kind of swaddling moment that Drax did until you talked about him, you know, dancing. But it was a little bit much, a bit like... Like, every time he was on screen, the only thing I thought was, like, merchandise.
Oh, yeah.
Merchandise.
And as you know, as soon as they did that little post-credits in the first movie with Baby Groot... Yeah.
In the plant pot.
In the plant pot, you just... Ugh, yeah. This is it now. This is my life for the next 5 years. Yeah. Is everyone going, oh, do you love Marvel movies? Oh, yeah, I love Baby Dancing Groot. Shut up.
I'm obviously not nearly as personally offended by Baby Groot as you are. The only other thing I will say from that, I mean, I do think he was overused. However, I think he was also just part of a lot of attempts at humor in this film that didn't quite work. I think if they had used him less, if he'd been left with a babysitter or something, I do think he provided a few moments where, like so many of the Guardians, they've got these intense relationships happening with one another, and a lot of them spend a lot of this movie hiding what their real feelings are. I liked that quite often, like with a quick interaction with Groot, it gave them the opportunity to show like an unconditional tenderness every now and again, which in every other interaction was singularly incapable of. So like, you know, yes, it is very schmaltzy, but like when Gamora waves to Groot, or when, you know, Rocket is just being like a little, you know, a little bit like protective of him or things like that. I think those moments worked enough for me to see their value.
What I don't understand is, and I think as a result of our past minute or two's conversation...
This has been like watching me when I'm on my Doctor Strange rant. It's been really interesting.
I think this, where this movie falls down, and we're talking about stuff like Empire Strikes Back, where you go, what a brilliant sequel. Do you know what I mean? Not to a movie that was terrible, to a movie that was phenomenal, and then they've gone and exceeded it in a lot of people's opinion, is the take a team that you love, and they split them up, and they make them do different things, and they show you them fragmented and on different missions or doing different things and having different experiences but all working together to become part of a team and overcome something.
Like Winter Soldier.
Yeah, spot on. Great. And other Marvel movies do it as well. The whole team is together for the whole of the movie.
Not Rocket.
One of them is split up.
Rocket for the like, last 45 minutes.
But for a big whack of the movie, they're all together. And it had been, I think we're starting to see one of the difficulties of the Marvel Universe is that a lot of the movies have kind of been constrained by Infinity War.
Yeah.
And I'd be really surprised if Marvel, after this, try and build up to one singular movie again. Because they couldn't have the team separated at the end of this movie and going, what are they going to do? How are they, you know, Rocket's frozen in carbonite. How's he going to get out? You know, I mean, they couldn't do that. They had to bring everyone back together. So it would have been much more interesting if they'd have sent Groot and Rocket and maybe someone else off to do a completely different thing and have a tough time of it and just end the movie in a way that you're going, oh my God, I can't wait for Guardians 3.
I think that's what we're going to get with Infinity War. I think there's going to be lots of different missions and things taking place.
A lot of people split up.
And then we're not going to know the outcome by the end of Infinity War.
Oh my god. Well, in 24 hours' time, I will be making a big old pot of coffee and getting my ticket ready for Avengers Infinity War at the midnight showing. So when you listen to this podcast, Avengers Infinity War will already have been out in the movies for about a week. So I'm really super excited for you if you've not seen it yet. If you have seen it, you should drop us a message with your thoughts and opinions. We've only got a few movies left now to watch in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But if you're watching along, why don't you swing on by to Apple Podcasts and hit that subscribe button? Because next week we'll be talking about Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yes.
I'm really excited for that one. But for Guardians, what do you think, Anna? Does it stay or does it go?
I'm really glad I rewatched this movie. I don't see myself ever watching it again, but I enjoyed it much more than I remember. And I think especially for the points that Martin has laid out, I think it should stay.
Martin?
I think it should stay as well. And it's weird for me to be the champion of a film. I'm enjoying being in this role. But if you need me between now and then, I'm going to be on Planet Daddy.
Oh, wow. I think this movie can stay in the trash. Where it belongs.
You've not chucked that many out.
This, if you sat me down and said, pick a Marvel movie, I'd rather watch The Hulk than this.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Because at least The Hulk has that, like, this is trash value. This isn't even comically shit.
Oh, this one just hurts.
Did you keep or go Doctor Strange? You kept it, didn't you?
No, I think we went it.
Off at the
did
end.
We?
I can't remember.
Wow, you are. Phase 3 is not working out well for you, is it?
I was super pumped for Phase 3 because it's got some great movies in it. Yeah. And if I go back and rewatch Spider-Man and Thor,
yeah,
and they're trash,
oh, God.
I think you'll be all right.
I think we'll be all right. I've seen Spider-Man a few times. I've seen Thor a few times now anyway.
I've only seen Thor in the cinema. I've not rewatched at home yet.
I've only seen it in the cinema.
So I saw it in the cinema twice. Okay. I've not seen it on home video.
Hmm.
Which, as well, a point about this movie, which instantly made me not like it, is it's not on Netflix. I could barely get a hold of it. I had to buy it off Sky DVD.
Did you watch it in Taiwanese or?
Yeah.
I had to get this off of Sky box office. God. So I'll be getting my free DVD in the post. So, you know.
If anybody wants Dan's free Guardians 2 DVD, we can send it to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
We should send it to Jay to
What am I going to do with a goddamn DVD these days?
Well, I've got a DVD player.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, I know I was about to complain about Sky, and I could have popped for a Blu-ray edition, but I'm not paying $16.99 for bloody Blu-ray.
We buy all ours on iTunes, and it was £10.
So much, Chile
is a lot of money.
Chile movies is where I've started renting them if they're like affordable on Chile's, but this one was like $9.99 as well. Mm.
Chile's, isn't that some sort of American restaurant?
Yes, it is.
Where they play terrible music and serve forms of chicken.
Yep. That's it indeed.
Has it ever been swallowed by a giant amount of blue goop?
Not that I've seen.
Another Shield
only.
Cover up.
Well, thank you very much for listening, everyone. I've had a terrible time. But hopefully we will be back and more upbeat next week. I know you're upbeat. You guys are loving it.
Yeah.
But I will be more upbeat next week, I promise, because my favourite superhero... is Spider-Man.
Really?
It's taken a long time to admit this, but Spidey's got my heart.
Yay!
Did you find him on Planet Daddy?
Well, no! Oh, you ruined it!
Signed up for Planet Daddy and I got a little...
Oh, stop it, both of you! Message. I'm begging you!
His name was Uncle Ben, 99.
You know, when I upload these podcasts, I have to mark them whether they're explicit or not. And I haven't had to yet, but I feel like this one I might have to.
I think this is explicit content, and that was before we even started talking, because this movie is a steaming pile of turd. Anyway. before we disillusion you with the Marvel Cinematic Universe so you don't come back, as I said, next week we'll be discussing Spider-Man. But between now and then, Anna, where can listeners find you?
You can find me on Instagram, Anna Marvelous, two N's, two L's.
And Martin, what about you?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Marty Loves.
And I am at DVM Preston across Twitter and Instagram. If you have any messages to send in, please send them to one of the three of us. Any fan mail or any suggestions for our fan mail segment, name, we'll add them into the pot. And we'll probably talk about them next week.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for listening, everyone. This has been a marvelous lunch break. Have a wonderful week between now and the next episode. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay.
Oh my God, there's so many of them. Oh, I can't handle it. Just
this could easily be long. There's five post-credit scenes.
Okay, I've only watched two of them.
Okay, let me fire them at you. Number one, idiot guy trying to use the arrow.
Yeah, that doesn't.
It's not really a post-credits.
Is he going to appear in Infinity War? Do you think?
Potentially, right?
Well, maybe. I have no idea.
He's not on the poster. But neither is Gwyneth Paltrow. So
yeah.
So that one, we can can that one off. Done. Next.
But maybe that means he'll be in next Guardians movie.
Yeah, totally. What I didn't understand is he's wearing the red mohawk, but that we see that disintegrate.
Well, that one was like a prototype, so I can only assume and he's Rocket would have made another one.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. Number two, the original Guardians of the Galaxy crop up featuring Sylvester Stallone, a bunch of other people, and a Cyberman head voiced by Miley Cyrus.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's weird.
Yes.
Right, I missed that one.
They're all stood around and it's like, oh, we're so
we love Yondu. He was the best.
Yeah. Wow. He was trafficking kids. Yeah, what a great
guy. We forgive
him.
To the brothel.
And then they're like, then they say, how about we go rob some shit?
Right,
it's
good.
Like, okay, right. Thanks. You're upstanding individuals. It was really good nod to the original Guardians of the Galaxy, but it's not, because Yondu was an original Guardian.
Okay.
So it was kind of a cheeky nod. Mm. If they show up in the next movie and they're the big bad,
ooh, that could be interesting.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
But,
big fan of Michelle Yeoh. But anyway.
Who cares? And I tell you what, if they do show up in the next movie and we have to deal with a Cyberman head voiced by Miley Cyrus, I may be even more incensed.
I really like Miley Cyrus.
Don't attack me.
Do you like Miley Cyrus as a voice actor?
Do you remember when she played that hamster in that animated DreamWorks picture?
Bolt.
Yeah.
No, I never saw it. But yeah, like, I can't possibly comment.
I wonder why. Number three, Groot has a potty mouth.
That was quite upsetting. Yeah, I'm not into Teenage Groot.
What do you think Teenage Groot's room smells like? I think it smells like damp moss.
Yeah, compost.
Mossy.
Mm.
Ugh. Ugh.
Next.
I'm just going to say one thing.
Oh, no.
If I see Avengers Infinity War and that is ruined by a pissing teenage tree...
Playing on his DS.
Playing on his goddamn Game Boy Advance. I'm out. That's it. Right. I'm done. No more Marvelous Lunch Break. Number four, Golden Lady with a scary egg.
Oh, I had a question about the egg. When she said she's called it Adam,
yes.
Is that like a throwback to the comics? Is that a reference that I didn't get?
It's like mega important.
Okay, right, because you'll have to enlighten me.
Okay.
So... Adam is this, this sort of created being. He's super powerful. He has a connection with the Infinity Stones as well, but he's on the side of good. But it has been confirmed that he is not in the Infinity War movie, but I think he's going to be in Guardians 4.
Guardians 4?
Guardians 3.
Do me a favor.
Guardians 3. Okay.
And that's literally all I know about him, just from having looked it up. It was funny, though, because for me it was sort of similar. Like, the first time I saw Thanos in the end credits, I was like, who is that guy? So I think it's kind of a similar thing for a lot of people.
Okay.
So the Infinity War thing as well is still, I think, up in arms. whether he shows up in this movie. Really? Because he plays... Maybe this is a reason that he might show up afterwards. Mm. But he plays a really big part in rebuilding the universe. I believe... I may have got this completely wrong in my memory. But he plays a part in rebuilding the universe when Thanos wipes out half of it.
Interesting.
And is also intrinsic to the story of the final missing Infinity Stone.
Oh.
The Soul Gem. Right? So...
More characters. No!
This film is... My mind is blown every time we talk about it, about the possibilities of what could happen. I've started watching conspiracy theories on YouTube about it.
Have you?
Yeah. Oh God, conspiracy theory, not just fan theories.
Let's call it fan theories, yeah.
Okay. What's your favourite one? This is like the final chance that we're going to get.
No, I don't want to talk about it because I feel like
now we're going to feel, what the heck is that word? Irrelevant, if we're still talking about
Let's just say I'm really looking forward to our Infinity War podcast
because
I think we'll have so much to talk about.
Oh my God.
And we can talk about Martin's conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
Before that, there's another post credits.
Right, what was that one?
Stan Lee, the Watcher.
Oh, right. Right,
yeah. So the Watchmen. God. The Watcher's there with his Watcher mates.
Yeah.
Stan Lee's sat on a rock.
Yeah.
Exposes a huge continuity error.
Ooh, does he?
Because he mentions being a FedEx guy,
yeah,
which happens after the Winter Soldier.
But if he works for the Watchers, maybe...
Nah, he's explaining it.
Anyway,
doesn't matter. It was such a big continuity error that James Gunn apologized.
Oh, so it was just a proper mess up.
Proper mess up.
I hate when they do that. Just
but what he said is that, you know, look, he may have also delivered for FedEx at other times.
Fair enough.
But, you know, I'm British, so I've got no idea what FedEx is. Because whenever I've used them in this country, they don't deliver stuff. So thank you, FedEx. And if you do want to sponsor this podcast, please get in touch at dbmpreston at martinloves or annamarvelous, two N's, two L's. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you next Wednesday. Have a wonderful week. It's been a marvelous lunch break. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.